And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
That doesn't sound good.
Paper shredder's jammed, but I think I fixed it.
Oh, well, try shredding these $50 bills then.
Seems like it's working.
Better try another $400.
Stop. Instead of using money, use regular paper. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
Reading with your kids.
Hola, ni hao, konnichiwa, assalamu alaikum, shalom, jambo. Bienvenidos. Hi, my name is Jed Lee, and this is the Reading With Your Kids podcast, an iHeartRadio Best Kids and Family Podcast Award nominee. We are so happy that you're here to join us today. Please make sure your kids are with you, because this is a special episode of the Reading With Your Kids podcast designed for you to listen with your kids. Right now, my friends, gather around your devices. It's time to solve it.
This is Solve It for Kids.
Hey, 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 so great to see you. Come on in. You are looking fantastic. Hi, my name is Jed Lee. Welcome to Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek into the real world of scientists, engineers, and artists as they solve problems in their jobs using curiosity, critical thinking, and creativity. Now, please welcome my co-host, my partner in exploration, our dean of all things STEM and STEAM, Jennifer Swanson. Hey, Jennifer, what's going on?
I am doing great. How are you, Jed?
I'm awesome. I'm so excited. Solve It for Kids, the first episode was like amazing. I learned so much, and I can't wait to figure out what we're going to be learning today.
Well, I don't know exactly yet, but I'm feeling very magical about today's guest.
Magical?
So I don't know. It's just something out there.
That's like, well, that's probably for me, you know, because I just bring magic wherever I go. But before we talk about what we're going to be learning today, do you have a shout out for someone?
I do. We have a brand new team member that we would like to give a shout out to. Hello, Emily. Thank you for joining the Solve It for Kids team.
Oh, yeah.
This is awesome. Emily, good for you. Thanks for being a member of the team. Now, what did Emily do, or what did Emily's parents do to make her a member of the team?
Well, if you're interested in becoming a member of the Solve It for Kids team, ask your parents and go to the Solve It for Kids website and click on Become a Team Member. And all the information is there. And if you're a team member, you're going to get special looks behind the scenes, and we'll give you a shout out on your birthday and all of these different things. So check it out on the website.
That's awesome. I can't wait. We have so many team members that it takes us a half an hour to shout out to everyone. Well, no, I probably don't want that. Anyways, hey, can I spin the wheel and find out
spin the wheel.
All right, here we go.
How do you cut a person in half safely?
I have no idea, Jed, but boy, I can't wait to find out.
Well, Jennifer, I know how to solve the first part of that problem perfectly. I just don't know how to put the person back together again. But I know someone who can. I can't wait for you to meet my friend. You know, some people claim to be the best magician in their city or town. Some people claim to be the best magician in their state or in their country. But my friend was named the First Lady of Magic for a continent, an entire continent. And I'm not talking about Antarctica, where all you have to do is perform penguins. No, my friend is the First Lady of Magic for Australia. Please welcome to the show, Sue Ann Webster. Sue Ann, how are you?
I'm really well, Jed. Thank you for that amazing introduction.
I'm going to say, now where do we go from here, Jed? You take us to the top of the mountain, and now the show's over.
The reason I'm so excited is because Sue Ann is an awesome magician. She's also an awesome friend. And kids are always asking me, how do you cut a person in half? And I don't know. I don't know how to do it, but Sue Ann knows how to do it. She has her own unique version of it too. So Sue Ann, how do you cut a person in half and then put them back together and then keep it a secret?
Whoa. Well,
No pressure.
Well, I suppose it all comes down to smoke and mirrors. there's a lot of performance. I suppose it's a science in performance, really.
Because
there's a lot of audience psychology. There's a lot of misdirection, and there's a lot of and misdirection can come in the forms of sound misdirection, color misdirection, timing, and all sorts of things. Larger movements cover smaller movements, and with any kind of illusion, magic trick, any sort of performance, magicians are constantly using all of the methods that we can to manipulate, I suppose, a person's mind in what they see. So what I'm doing in reality is different to what someone's perceiving it. And so we have to be very careful with not exposing secrets, because once you expose the secret, there's no magic anymore. So right. The magic happens when there's lots of secrets. And I must say, it's astonishing to know how easy it is to be deceived. And magic will reveal that like nothing else.
So can you, I mean, without giving anything away, can you give us an example of, like, what you would do? Like a clap, you know, like a sound that might distract people.
Exactly. Well, if we need to move something from some place to another and it might make a sound, yes, we can use sound, like clapping, like get the audience to clap and they can't hear what's happening. So anything like that, and you don't even know it's happening as an audience member, because it all flows on with sight and sound and timing, and it's like a roller coaster. If somebody gets on that little carriage on a roller coaster and off you go, and before you know it, you've just had an amazing experience, but you know, and it's done. But the trick about it is to then move on to something else to stop people from thinking, hang on a minute, how did she do that, or how did the magicians do that? And then suddenly you're on another roller coaster somewhere else. You're taking them on an adventure, on a story, and before their minds stop to think, you're taking them somewhere else. And then when they look back over the whole thing, the whole performance, if you've done your job properly as a magician, the people will just remember all the positive things, because that's what humans generally remember in their mind, the positive aspects of something. If you keep that highlighted in their minds, then they will remember exactly what you want them to remember, and that's not the secret. It's just the magic of it. Mm.
And that's why I love performing magic so much. There are some people get up on stage and they say, look at me, look how cool I am because I can do this. But I love to get up on stage and tell a story, or bring somebody up on stage and let the magic happen in their hands, or because of something they do.
Yeah, just to give them a good time and feel good about themselves, it would be is an ultimate reason to perform, really, anything, because why would you do it for any other reason? So
I agree with that. I do, when I do presentations for kids at schools with my books, I make them very interactive. I get the kids to be involved. I want them to be like, yes, I want to be an astronaut. Raise your hand. You know, all that kind of stuff. Because the more you get them involved, I think the more they feel comfortable and they enjoy the experience. And I know you do that with your shows too, Jed.
Oh, I do. And Sue Ann, before we go any further, I was wondering, is it okay for us, we're not going to reveal any methods, but is it okay for us right now to let the people listening know that when you're performing the cutting the person in half illusion, you're not really cutting the person in half?
Okay, look, I'll actually tell you a few things. No, we don't. It's all an illusion, of course. Back in the old days when all of this started back in, I think it was, the sawing in half is commonly believed to be invented by P.T. Selbert and first performed in the January of 1921 on stage.
Wow.
And so that's almost 100 years ago.
It's yeah.
100-year anniversary. And when that first happened, you know, the time then was not like today, where we have the internet and television and movies, and we're so used to seeing all sorts of things. But back then, to saw someone in half, it was like, whoa, we have to go and see this, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And for all intents and purposes, you know, it looked real. And of course, the person came back to life. But what you were saying, Jennifer, is very true, is getting the audience involved. And with the soaring in half, with all of the tricks I do, there's a lot of audience interaction to get them involved, to get them to touch the magic, to feel it, to feel what, you know. And with the soaring in half, that it was a big illusion. It was a very heavy illusion. It was, but it was a very thin illusion, as in, you know, when you looked at it, there weren't big, thick boxes. There were very thin boxes. So when the man got in it, there was no room to move. Now, this is very important, like you were saying about bringing people up to experience things, is that we would get an audience member to come up, because if you have an audience member up, the rest of the audience will feel like they're up there with them.
Yes.
And what we did, we got them to look under this soaring in half. We got them to walk around it, to bang the table, you know, to see that there's, you know, it's solid. To look to look at the pieces of the boxes that went on top, to actually feel it, rattle the chains. All of this is on a video. I have a video with it that people can see at the.
Oh, now I have to watch it. Yeah, we'll put it on the website for everybody. This look, yeah, I have to see this. This sounds so cool.
At the parents' discretion.
Yeah.
But taking out all the very bad bits, that, you know, because, you know, there used to be that, you know, that sort of stuff, that liquid stuff that comes out of people on it. But I've cut all of that out. Anyway, so the audience, that now we used to perform it with an audience on stage. So it's a completely surroundable illusion. So it's very, very fair. But after a while, with all the occupational health and safety, you know, laws, we had to keep the person off stage because I used a live chainsaw.
Oh my gosh. Really? Now I really have to see this.
The chainsaw was extended so people could see it going right through the illusion, because a lot of chainsaws are fairly short. This was extended. And I would prove that it would work because it would go through a piece of wood on stage before the performance. So it was a little bit of fun. It was tongue-in-cheek the way we used to perform it, but it looked pretty grand guignol-y. I was like, but it was fun. It was supposed to be funny.
And this is awesome.
And so we'd get the audience all involved. So then the audience member, then they would sit back down. Now, all went very well. Everything looked really good. But then we were booked to do the soaring in half on a very high stage at Crown Casino in Melbourne, Australia. And there were 2,500 people in the audience. And they were completely surrounding the stage. Now, Jed, you know, as a magician, a lot of magic can't be done surrounded. You know, reveal tricks and things like that. Well, our soaring in half is one of the very, very few, if not the only one. It's back then in the early 2000s, late 1900s, that were completely surroundable. Now, sure, people can look underneath, they can look on top, they can touch it and the whole thing, but in performance, to be able to hide the, you know, like the person who got on the table, and there's no room to move. And see, this is the illusion of it. There is no room to move. So we had a little problem. We had to solve it in the fact that the audience were underneath. They were on top under, you know, it's normally illusions are built so people see them from certain angles. This one was underneath. So pretty much this soaring in half had to be completely surroundable, as in up above and underneath as well.
Wow.
So solve that. Well, you know, without giving away secrets, we go back to what I said before about the misdirection, about optical illusions, about timing, about all sorts of things. So I had to do a lot of misdirecting with the way I presented. But there was just a simple little solution, because a lot of solutions generally, when you look, step back from a problem, instead of getting overwhelmed by the problem, you just look at it and say, now there must be something simple we can do here.
Right.
And we solved the problem by just, there was a little tiny addition to it. That addition came with, I suppose, you know, I can reveal that the fact that we used colouring you know, because different colors will attract people's eyes. So we're looking at taking the mind away from where I want them to look, to something else. And that something else was a bit of color. And,
right.
And that's just to give you an idea. You know, when you've got white and black, white's going to stand out against black.
Right.
Yellow against black. Silver, shiny things tend to take the eye away from something that is a matte color. All right. And all of these things. Now, these things can be so small, and it can be just, you know, these things can be used to actually highlight something, you know, that we want people to see. But at the same time, right. They can be used to take the eye away from something we don't want them to see. And it's as simple as that.
Wow. So basically you're a psychologist too. Like you understand how people think. That's true, because if you play on stuff that, you know, people are kind of trained to know or whatever to look at, you know, the thing that while you were describing came to mind is, you know, when, I did a book called Brain Games, which is basically how, you know, your brain thinks. And if you imagine a red octagonal square, people will immediately think that that's a stop sign. So if you play on something like that, that they know, then that'll get them to think about something else or look in a different direction or.
Absolutely. And magicians do that all the time. And the most impressive magic of all is when you get an ordinary object that people are so familiar with and doing something extraordinary with it. And that's when they say that's impossible. You see, if something is, if you have a piece of a magical apparatus and it's all done up really pretty and it looks pretty, it looks fantastic, it looks wonderful, but it can also look suspicious. Whereas if you have an ordinary something and make it extraordinary, that's when people say, the subtrunk illusion where, you know, you have magicians changing places, in a split second. We just had an ordinary, wooden trunk. And again, the audience will come up and tap, like they'd bash it, they'd inspect it, and they just go, no, that's impossible. They'd inspect everything. That's the beauty of having an audience member to inspect things, to touch things, is they go, no, that's everything. You know, guys, you know, all those audience members out there, this is real. I can tell you for a fact that there's nothing wrong with this. And then you
do your illusion and people are like, what happened? Exactly. How do they do that?
Exactly. So it's as simple as that. And yes, there's a lot of audience psychology in it.
So, and one of the things that you said that I just want to emphasize is that you were faced with this really, really challenging problem, and you were looking at it and talking to different people, and you weren't able to solve it until you took a moment to kind of step back, step away from the problem, take a deep breath and relax. And then when you went to look at it again, you were able to discover something new. Your brain was able to look at the problem in a new way, and you were able to solve it. And I think that's really important for kids to remember that when they're challenged with something, when they're facing a test or some kind of challenge, and they feel like they don't know the answer, they'll never be able to get it, always remember to take a moment to breathe and relax, and then look at the problem again, and hopefully you'll discover the answer.
Exactly. Exactly. Because what those kids are doing when they're studying and taking tests is that, you know, the adults know that these kids can do it. And really what the children are learning is just to stop, let your brain just relax, step out, and it's problem solving. And we know the kids can do it. It's just the children, the kids, they've got to believe that they can do this. And, and like you said, Jed, it's just a matter of sitting back, relaxing, saying, no, I can do this, and let your mind just relax. And, you know, most of the time it will just come. You'll just see it.
Mm-hmm. So I have a question for you, because clearly you know how to problem solve on your feet. Like if you were on the stage, like in something, so have you had, or can you share things that have gone wrong, any quote-unquote failures where you have to figure it out like immediately right in front of people?
Oh,
you had that?
Oh, yes. And, you know, magicians who say that hasn't happened, they're lying. thing?
Jed's nodding his head, yes.
In fact, there's very clever magicians who have developed magic sports, and that is precisely to train a magician how to get out of these difficult situations.
Oh,
for
wow.
example, one of the a very simple magic sport game. It's like theatre sports, but for magicians. And the magicians might perform the linking rings. This is one of the simplest. And they'll always be performing it to a piece of music that they know. And they'll get on stage and they're nervous, maybe they're overexcited. They'll have a routine, but they know exactly what they're going to do with those linking rings, where the rings melt through each other and they link and unlink to the piece of music. It helps them perform. If they're performing to music, the magician gets up and he doesn't know what music that they're going to be given. So the audience will give them any piece of music, and they have to perform to that. So it's like improvisation skills, and they have to think.
Wow.
That's one of the simplest things. One of the hardest things to do as a magician is that you have your magic ready to perform in front of you, and somebody comes up without you looking, and they take one little thing away. Yeah, see, Jed's laughing. He knows that can kill your whole magic trick. And you have to think on your feet on how to solve that, because what the magician needs to remember is that the audience has no idea what you're about to perform. And so you need to think on your feet. And magicians, this is another thing magicians don't do, is give away what they're going to do beforehand. Because that's when you're getting everyone to say, oh, they're going to do this. So you're going to look for everything that's related to that. And, you know, mostly if something goes wrong, I go, ha, ha, yeah, okay. So you don't tell them. You lead them along a story and perform something. So they don't know what's going to happen beforehand, but you're leading them to a point. They know just enough. And then you perform the magic. But, yes, it does happen. And it happens by we could simply forget something, something wasn't placed in the right position. It's gone. Or here's one, the cups and balls, right? The ball might fall off the table and it's like, oh no, what's going to happen? Because that will just ruin the whole routine if we don't think on our feet really quickly and just move on with that. Go and pick it up. Just you might have to change the magic slightly, but the audience doesn't know what your next move is, so you will need to think on your feet and improvise the moves and get it back on track. It happens, yes. So.
And you just kind of roll with it, so to speak.
You just are like, okay,
and that one worked okay, and now we're on to this kind of
that's
thing.
That's right. Mm-hmm. It's amazing what a smile can do. Misdirection.
Exactly.
Hey, it's all right. I'm having a good time. And see, when the magician's having a good time, the audience is going to have a good time. Yeah. You know, if they look like, oh no, something's gone wrong, the audience is just going to, uh-oh, this is really bad. They won't.
A lot of kids will ask me if I've ever made a mistake on stage, and then I'll answer them very honestly. I don't think I've done a show where I haven't made a mistake on stage.
You're an honest magician. That's really good.
Yeah, I mean, especially because, you know, you have to work. I mean, there's, like you said, there's so many moving pieces that you guys literally do. I mean, when I do my presentations, I'll have a PowerPoint slide and occasionally the slides will get out of order, but that's not horrible. Whereas with you guys, you have so many moving parts.
Yeah, and it is a true thing with magicians. It's if something can go wrong, it will go wrong, and no matter how many times you perform it by yourself in front of an audience, in front of your dog or your cat or whatever, in front of your friends, it doesn't matter how many times you performed it, because, you know, you're in front of a live audience, and that's the best time to perform magic is in front of a live audience, because, you know, anything on screen, they'll think, oh, well, we know that. That can be, an editing magic, you know, and that's very true. We can hide things very well on screen, and maybe a little later in the program I can sort of give that away, probably with one of the soaring in half that the kids can do from Astounding, is that it's different performing live, because the human brain can't necessarily remember back on a certain a certain thing happened. Whereas on video, they can stop and start it. They can go over every single frame and they'll find the secret. Whereas in real life, you know that the brain won't see a particular something if you sort of smile, whereas it doesn't happen on screen. They won't look at you smile. They'll look at what you're doing.
I'll ask you both. Have you had, I assume you've had both people come up to you and say, I know how you did that. All the
time. Yeah, lots of kids come and adults come up to me and they go, I know how you did that. And they don't.
With the floating table. Oh, Jed, you know the floating table. You know, they'll come up and say, I know how that's done. It's done with magnets or it's done with them. It's done with little fans. You know,
a drone. There you go.
And it's like, that's really good. Keep thinking because you don't want to, you know, you just want the kids to keep on thinking. There's great imagination and you got to use that. That's great.
Exactly. But, you know, but it's cool because they are trying to think about how this could have, you know, been figured out. So, of course, that's you guys, you know, you don't want to squash their dreams or,
Going back to something that Sue Ann said earlier on in the interview, you know, unless you're really interested in performing magic to just reveal secrets, to just know secrets, it does take away from the magic. My beautiful wife will oftentimes come to a show and she'll be in the audience with me, and I don't keep secrets from my wife. And I remember one time she was watching Sue Ann perform, and she turned to me. She said, how does she do that? And I said, do you really want to know? And she said, yes, yes. So I told her, and then she turned to me, and she said, you've ruined the magic for me. So now I don't tell her any secrets, and she loves magic.
Yeah, that's exactly like my husband. Yeah, he just does not want to know because it ruins it.
Well, and so I'm an author, so I'll watch movies and I'll know like who the killer is or where this plot line's going. And my husband's now like, just don't tell me. Although he's getting better and he'll go, I have this. Like, I figured this out. And I'll be like, no, you're wrong. It's not that person. It's this person. But okay. Same thing. So do you have any tips for our aspiring magicians out there, maybe? Like, where do they start? Or do they just practice over and over? What do you think?
Oh, yes. Look, there's They can, the best thing to do, I suppose, to start is to get a magic book. They can find them from the libraries. They can find them online anywhere. I have one, yes. It's called Astounding. Now, the Astounding Quick Slick Magic Tricks by Sue Ann Webster. And the thing about that one, is that there are 70 tricks in there.
Wow.
They can download it so they can get a germ-free copy. We're in the pandemic at the moment.
Yeah. So, exactly.
And it's what it is that it's not just the tricks. It's really difficult, as Jedley would know, that to read how to do a magic trick and translate that into a performance is poor. It's like a mountain, a huge chasm. It's one thing knowing how a trick is done. It's another thing performing it. This one I've tried to be a mentor to people. I can't be a mentor to everybody, of course, but in this way I try to talk them through with all the experience that I've had in short snippets of information that would be hopefully very helpful to them, so they understand. But not only that, I've started, and I know I probably won't do it for all of them, but I've for some of the magic tricks that have particularly also been featured in the School Magazine, which is the longest running literary magazine in the world, through the Department of Education in New South Wales, here in Australia, they've featured a few of these magic tricks. And some of those magic tricks, I've put them on video, the performance of them. So, for example, the first trick in the book is sawing in half. And the kids will do their own soaring in half. I've not only in Act One talked a lot about how to perform and the psychology of it, but in Part Two of the tricks, and the first trick in that section is the soaring in half, where people get to learn to do their own version at home using things around the house. In this case, an envelope and a piece of cardboard, and they can draw their own person on the cardboard, put that person through the envelope from one end to the other and cut that person in half and then restore them. And they can do it themselves. Now, when you're reading the instructions, it's like, okay, yep, I got that. It gets a bit hard because magic is magic. You need to use your brain in magic. These are activities that will last for days, weeks, months, years, and there are 70 of them, right?
There you go. So to hear parents go, get your kid a magic book.
Yeah, exactly, and learn. And see, if they get a bit confused, so sometimes I'll look at some instructions and go, okay, well, I can see the pictures to the instructions. So it's not only the instructions and how to perform, it's the pictures of them, but then I've also made a video of it. So there's a little video of the sawing in half that the kids can do in performance. I don't give away the magic on there, but it just gives an idea how to perform. Now, even something as simple as that, you have to use the same principles of problem solving as the large sawing in half that I performed. That might be a big 200 kilogram illusion, but this is something really small, but it takes just as much, brain power to try and, just perform that without exposing the secret. And everybody performs differently. Everybody has their own unique style. Everybody, some people might be right-handed or left-handed, or they'll have different scissors to somebody else or a different envelope, different materials. And all of this makes a big difference in how something's performed and executed, I suppose you can say. Where it takes a lot of practice to be able to actually perform this. So the trick is simple, but the performance of it, you know, it takes a bit of skill. It's not a hard trick, but in order to not expose the secret, that's where you've got to practice and to do it in a way where you don't give away what is happening while you're doing it to make it magic in the end.
Well, so we could keep talking forever, but we know that you can't keep listening for forever.
Jennifer, before we say goodbye to Sue Ann, we want all the kids out there to go to solveitforkids.com. We're going to have links to some of Sue Ann's performance videos, but also Sue Ann just texted me. She's giving us permission to put up instructions to teach you how you can do your own cutting the person in half illusion. And when you perfect it, take a video of yourself doing it. If you're on social media and you have your parents' permission, put it up on social media, tag it, Kids Solve. We'll make sure that Sue Ann has a look at it.
Thank you. It's been wonderful talking with you.
Yes, thanks for, this was fabulous for me. I didn't know much about magic and wow.
Hey, Jennifer, that was a pretty amazing episode of Solve It for Kids.
Oh, my gosh. That was so awesome.
Isn't it cool? We have these such great friends. I mean, you know Aquanauts, and I understand you know an astronaut or three. And I know, like, these amazing artists. And, wow, talk about all the fun we're going to have here on Solve It for Kids. I mean, we're going to be introducing kids to some amazing people.
Oh, absolutely. And the scientists and engineers and experts are just as excited to meet our listeners as we are to listen to them.
Yeah, and that challenge thing, I love Sue Ann's challenge. And remind everybody where they can go to let us know that they're doing the challenge.
So, if you forget what the challenge is, go to our solveforkids.com website, because it'll be listed there, and you can even listen to the podcast again if you want. And make sure you ask your parents' permission, but once you do the challenge, don't forget to tag us on Twitter and Instagram @KidsSolve, because we want to see the cool things that you're creating to go along with this, and so do that. Our guests, they're all excited to see something that kids are creating.
And kids, if you want to learn more about my friend Sue Ann Webster, you can go to her website, which is ladymagician.com.au, because she's over in Australia, which is like the other side of the world, and it's so cool. Jennifer, where else, remind kids again where they can go to become a team member of Solve It for Kids.
So go to the Solve for Kids website and click on Become a Team Member. Make sure you take your parents with you, and you can take a look at all the different things that you can that will be available to you when you become a team member of Solve It.
That sounds awesome. I don't know about you, but I'm so excited. I had such a great time. I need to go to bed and rest because we have another episode next week, right?
We do have another episode next week, and this one's going to be tons of fun.
Awesome. Well, until next time, everyone, thanks for being part of Solve It for Kids. Bye, Jennifer.
Bye.